This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. Tensions are high as negotiations continue over whether Russian forces will leave Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. As Beneduccio reports, one West Virginia University professor is hoping the conflict is able to come to an end.
Russian forces are in the Ukrainian province of Crimea. This international incident is causing problems for the American government and for President Obama, who is trying to get the Russian government's influence out of the region. Boris Barkinov, a political science professor at West Virginia University, says that the situation is understandably very dangerous. He says he's hoping the situation doesn't escalate into a more international conflict.
I think that this is a very tense and dangerous situation, and in general, everyone should kind of stay sober and keep the temperature down. When you look at previous conflicts of that kind, very often the actors don't want to go in that direction. However, events overtake kind of their inclinations, and unintentionally things escalate. And although I think it's highly unlikely, we can't exclude it entirely, but I do think it's highly unlikely.
Barkinov says, while the world watches what goes on in the Ukraine, it's a mixed bag in terms of what people want to see happen.
Different groups and different countries have different stakes on this. So how they see the United States, I think, will reflect that. So, for example, if you're in Eastern Europe, if you're in Poland, if you're in the Baltic states, or in Romania, something like this, probably you will be looking towards American support. I think many people in Ukraine are also looking towards American support against the Russians. I think in Russia, we only have limited data so far, but my sense is that there's kind of rallying around the flag in Russia.
Barkinov says there's a complicated relationship between the two countries going back several years. He says this development came about because of instability in the Ukraine and Russian interests in the region.
I think that this was partly kind of a tactical move to increase Russian leverage in advance of what will be very difficult diplomatic negotiations. Russia has significant interests in Ukraine. They're very clear about them. And I think they foresee negotiations, and this gives them some leverage.
Barkinov says he's worried about an all-out civil war developing in the country, which would be difficult for Europe as well. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:36. The following county school systems are closed today: Barber, Fayette, Grant, Greenbrier, Logan, McDowell, Pocahontas, Preston, Randolph, Tucker, Webster, and Wyoming counties. All those schools are closed. Schools on a two-hour delay this morning: Brooke, Hancock, Mercer, Mingo, Monroe, Nicholas, Pendleton, Raleigh, Summers, and Upshur County schools on a two-hour delay. Morning snow flurries with blustery winds becoming partly sunny by this afternoon. Temperatures will be in the 20s and 30s. Partly cloudy overnight with lows in the teens and 20s. Partly sunny on Friday with highs reaching the 50s and 60s tomorrow.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by WVU Children's Hospital, serving the healthcare needs of all West Virginia's children, located in Ruby Memorial Hospital, online at wvukids.com.
Appalachian photographer and West Virginia native Roger May is taking on a new project, looking at the region 50 years after the war on poverty. May has set up a website and issued a call to photographers to submit photos from any county in the Appalachian region. West Virginia Public Radio, Cecilia Mason spoke with May about looking at Appalachia.
The images that were used to sort of shop that campaign around were often very derogatory and sort of inflammatory of Appalachia as a whole, although the photographs that most people identify with were you know, made in those those even those early days in Inez, Kentucky, and Martin County. And I thought a really good way to celebrate the 50th anniversary would be to crowdsource a project whereby photographers working in these 13 Appalachian states could photograph what they know as Appalachia and use these photographs as sort of a visual archive to stand as a mark in time of this is what Appalachia looks like 50 years later, to not continue to be defined by Appalachia, visually defined by Appalachia 50 years ago.
Do you think that people do still visualize Appalachia that way?
I think so. I think if you're not from there, it's very easy to do. In fact, even I guess if you're from there, it can still be easy to see Appalachia that way.
And what more do you think will be found by having people go out and photograph it today? What do you expect?
I think in some cases there'll still maybe be more questions than answers. At least I hope in some way that's the case, because I'm interested in the types of conversations that are going to come out of this project, not only from individual photographers, but from, you know, academics and scholars and sociologists and all folklorists and those sorts of people. And that is to sort of pull back and think about what it is to be from Appalachia, visually, how has it changed? Has it changed?
I think it's interesting that you chose to go the route of looking at the Appalachian Regional Commission website and identifying those counties and saying, this is where I want the photographs to be from.
I felt like it was important to establish some parameters. And some of those are, you know, that the work has to be made in 2014. And the next hard and fast rule is that the photograph has to be made in one of the counties defined by the Appalachian Regional Commission as Appalachia. I feel like the significance of the organization and the history of the organization, coupled with the anniversary of the War on Poverty, that's a fair match there to use that as a framework to work within for this project. Of course, the other hard and fast rule is that the photograph has to be yours. It has to be the photographer's copyright.
Now, when you get all these photographs collected and curated and posted, is that where they're going to stay, or do you have plans to print them at some point or do something with them in the future?
Yeah, well, the great hope is to move them from pixels to prints. Not all photographs, of course, but you know, there are a lot of things that I'm still trying to partner with folks and work behind the scenes with folks to maybe secure some funding and have some support to see this come through and move from web to gallery to traveling exhibition to, you know, possibly a book or, you know, an exhibition catalog or something of that nature.
Explain what people can do to get involved.
The place to start is the website, and that's looking at appalachia.org. And it's pretty self-explanatory from there. I list an overview, some sort of backstory about the War on Poverty and the scope of the project. There's a submissions link that goes through all of the details of the submission process, the specifics there. My email address is there as well. So if folks have any questions, they're more than welcome to email me, and I will get back to them as soon as possible. There's also a Defining Appalachia link on there that is virtually copied and pasted from the Appalachian Regional Commission site, which has a map of the Appalachian region, as well as a breakdown by state of every county that's considered Appalachian in there. So if there are any questions, one should be able to navigate to that and find out if their county or a county that they want to photograph in is Appalachian. There's also links on the website to our social media presence, our Facebook page, and our Instagram account. One of the things, too, that we'll be doing with Instagram is We'll be hosting guest Instagrammers from around the region. So folks in Alabama or New York or Pennsylvania will be able to sort of take over the Instagram account for a set period of time and you know, make pictures with their iPhones or their mobile phones, post them to Instagram and use a series of hashtags to identify the county and the state and that sort of thing, just as sort of a much less formal visual conversation on that platform.
Well, Roger May, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can learn more about Roger May's Looking at Appalachia project and see a few of the photos that have been submitted on our website, wvpublic.org. As a food movement that celebrates all things organic and locally grown continues to grow across the country, juice bars are becoming more and more popular. There's one in Shepherdstown and another just opened in Morgantown. Glennis Board has become a regular and brings us this story.
Ruth Haas and her family moved to Morgantown from Elkins a year ago. And about the same time, she decided it might be cool to open a juice bar. A year later, her juice bar and cafe, called Real, opened its doors to a welcoming community.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Good. I want a smoothie.
Okay. Best thing to do is just try one of each one.
I mean, I've always said I just want to go someplace that has simple food. And I just thought it's what Morgantown needed. There's a lot of people in this area that want to get healthier, that are open to this kind of thing, and I just thought it was a really good idea.
Well, so did her loan officer. Originally, Haas just wanted to start a small mobile operation, but with some encouragement and a micro loan from the Small Business Administration, Haas is looking to fill a larger farm-to-table niche. Haas stocks organic produce, but locally sourced produce is what Real is all about. She's currently meeting with local farmers to see what deals she can make during the growing season. She's passionate about knowing where her food comes from. But for Haas, juicing is about more than a food movement.
I started juicing when I had breast cancer, like 15 years ago. And I started reading every book I could get my hands on because I just didn't feel comfortable with conventional medicine, like going all the way with conventional medicine. I mean, it has its place, don't get me wrong.
Haas started juicing morning, afternoon, and evening. And she attributes much of her health during her chemo treatments and after to the practice. She's what you might call a juice believer.
I saw what it did for me, and I've been juicing since then for 15 years, and it's so nutritionally dense. The juice, I mean, so many fruits and vegetables go into a 12-ounce glass of juice. It's just amazing.
What kind of ingredients are we talking about? One popular juice is called Heartbeat. It's blood red from the beets and also contains carrots, ginger, apples, and lemons. Another hot item is called Sweet Green, made from pineapple, apple, lemon, and kale.
Most of the juices are what I drink or I'll see a recipe out there. And kind of add to it or take away from it. Or if there is a really good price on organic produce one week, say on mangoes, I'll make something up, you know, to go with that.
And of course, no juice bar would be complete without wheatgrass.
The champagne of wheatgrasses, we drive all the way to Pennsylvania, to Swickley, Pennsylvania. The lady that grows its name is Cecily Routman, and she has a business called Juice Heaven. She's got a mobile juice bar, but she supplies all the juice bars in the Pittsburgh area and me with wheatgrass, and she has the best tasting wheatgrass. It's like nectar.
Haas says the sweetness is all in how Routman grows it. And I can attest, having had several shots at this point, it tastes like licking a lawnmower, but from a very sweet lawn. Like what you would imagine the grass of your childhood to taste like if you have golden childhood memories from frolicking through grassy fields, like I do. Real quick, the why behind wheatgrass. After a quick internet search, it increases red blood cell count and lowers blood pressure. It cleanses the blood, organs, and gastrointestinal tract of debris. Wheatgrass also stimulates metabolism and your thyroid gland, and it sweetens your breath, and tightens your gums, it slows the aging process. It turns gray hair back to its natural color. So wheatgrass is basically some kind of fountain of youth. Get in line. That's what people in Morgantown are doing anyway. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.